The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Beyond and hello, everyone. My name is Jonathan Dornbush, and this is Podcast Beyond, IGN's weekly PlayStation show covering all the latest and greatest and real news and fake news and interviews and rumors and news and just everything in the world of PlayStation. We actually have a busy show this week to talk about, but we also have an emotional one because we're all in studio today. I'm joined this week by Lucy O'Brien.
Hello.
Hello,
it is
Lucy.
So nice and weird to be back.
I know.
This is very surreal for me.
It's wonderful to be here, and I'll talk about why in just a second, but we're also joined by Max Scoville.
Hello, happy Max. To be here, and I plan to continue to be here, and it's nice being here.
It
and
is.
All that.
Being here is nice. Also here with us, for those especially, you'll notice probably on video, is Peppers. Peppers is with us. I'm sure he will chime in.
No,
please. We don't want the sensors.
The little struggling legs.
I don't know how YouTube sensors are with animals, but we're fine probably. But no, we do actually have a lot of PlayStation news to talk about this week, including rumors and reports of when God of War might be releasing. Big news about Final Fantasy VII Remake Part 2, which is not called Remake Part 2, Dragon's Dogma 2, the new PlayStation Plus is out. We have a lot to talk about, but most importantly for this show, and we'll get to the meat of it later, because we need to do the show as well, and I don't want to cry the whole time, is the fact that, Lucy, this is your last show with us as an IGN employee.
Correct. Will guest. I'm sticking around in the Bay Area, so anytime, you're like, we need Lucy O'Brien on the show to talk about David Cage.
Yes.
I will return. It is extremely bittersweet to be saying goodbye, but let's not be strangers.
Absolutely. Yes, we'll get to all the sad goodbyes at the end, because we do have news to talk about this week. But Lucy, we're happy you could be here with us for this final episode. We're happy to do it with you. And we have a lot to talk about this week.
We do.
It is an exciting episode where I didn't have to scramble for a run of show. We actually have a lot to talk about. And the first thing I want to start off with is that we have two new sequels confirmed. Big ones that people have been waiting a while for info about. I'll start with the first one because it's sort of a combo news piece. Is that Final Fantasy VII Remake Part 2 was officially revealed this past week. It is called Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. It is going to actually be, they confirmed, the second in a three-part remake trilogy project. They finally confirmed it's a trilogy. That's kind of what they're aiming
for. That's a weird relief for me.
Yeah, me too.
Obviously it would be nice if we have a complete story at some point in this decade, but if they just did like a two-parter, that would have sat weird with me.
Yeah,
you know, I just like trilogies. They're cleaner, it's just feels good.
Yeah, especially with without spoiling it, I think the scope of what this game is doing, and granted, I haven't played the original seven, which I've talked about before, but like knowing what this is in comparison to it probably needs more than one game to go. So we're going to be getting that. Rebirth is coming next winter, which means the end of 2023 or beginning of 2024. But before that, we're also getting a Crisis Core remake, which is coming this winter.
Now, people love Crisis Core.
They
right?
do.
I played the heck out of the mainline Final Fantasy series from 7 onwards, but I never really spun off out of that, and Crisis Core seems to be one of those like very fan favorites. Mm-hmm. Did you play it?
No.
I've never.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's
oh, okay,
a,
then
it's
we're
a,
all useless to
yes,
talk about
yeah.
it. Okay.
It's a PSP spinoff that came out, what, like 10 years after the original did, basically?
Yeah.
Was and, that kind of alongside Advent Children? I can't remember. Like it was.
I feel like it was part of that project and like Dirge of Cerberus. I don't want to get it wrong exactly on timing, but I think those were part of what was going on. But yeah, that's coming this winter. That one is multi-platform. Rebirth has only been announced for PS5, so it will be new gen only, not released on PS4, probably comes to PC at some point in the future. But we got teaser trailers for both of those. The Crisis Core one was just focused on Zack, I think I am correct in saying, since it's his story, and we'll get a little bit more there. And then Remake Part 2's trailer hinted at some of what we'll see at the beginning of that game, but I also don't want to spoil what Remake Part 1 does, because if you haven't played it, if you know anything about 7, which I only have a cursory knowledge of, it's wild what it does for that game. So those are really exciting to look forward to. I do have a question, since Lucy, you have played a bit of Final Fantasy. Max, how much FF have you played in general?
I've always sort of dabbled.
Okay.
You know, like I always really appreciated the characters in the world, but it was like as far as like being one of those people who's like played FF7 like 8 times, like that wasn't me.
Yeah.
I never owned it, you know, like I had a file on my friend's PlayStation and got like a chunk of the way through it. And then, I don't know, moved or we'd stopped being friends or whatever. And then I started again on, I think on Vita, and played with like the, where you could like speed through things or what, you know, like okay. I basically tried to jump into it a bunch of times. So I played the beginning a whole lot, you know, it's weirdly similar to Dune in that I've read like the first 80% of Dune, like 3 times.
Yeah.
I played the beginning of FF7 a whole bunch of times. So like, Remake was really fun, the first part. I'm like, all right, cool. And then I'm like, what happens at? I think they go snowboarding. There's a golden saucer. Yeah, I mean, it's I really enjoyed Remake. I had a really good time with it. What I didn't really know what to make of the end of it, you know, like it's sort of, I think it's funny how they were like, we're staying faithful. We're changing some stuff, get a little bit creative, but also we're staying faithful. And you get to the end, you're like, really? Are you now?
It seems like it blew the doors off everything. What's funny for me is I come to Final Fantasy from the Kingdom Hearts side. And so for me, it feels very appropriate for Nomura to be doing that with Final Fantasy as he's done with Kingdom Hearts. But Victoria wrote in to beyond@ign.com, like you can actually before the announcement, but it feels apropos for this week, and said, I've never played a Final Fantasy game at all, but after seeing the awesome footage for 16, I'm really interested in diving into the series. It's pretty overwhelming given how many entries there are. What game do you think would be a good starting point for someone new? Also love the show. I just heard about you all a few months ago and haven't missed an episode since. You guys inspired me to finally try going for platinums, and I just got my first on Horizon Forbidden West. Congratulations for that as well. But yeah, Final Fantasy. Lucy, do you have like a good, especially now? Because this is not a series. You don't start at 1.
Oh, God. I mean, this is the thing. I'm not the best person to ask. As I said, like I've played every mainline game, but only once.
Yeah.
Apart from maybe Final Fantasy VII, which I did play a few times through because I was a tiny child and had the time. I don't know. I think 15 is honestly like a decent entry point because it's, you know, it's accessible and it's new, and then you could move to Final Fantasy VII Remake. And then, you know, I think it's always good to start with the more modern accessible games.
Yeah.
And then if you love those enough, you can jump back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love the, you know, the older games as well, but in terms of a starting point, I feel like those are kind of self-contained enough to jump in and then if it hooks you,
yeah,
then you can go into the slightly more challenging older ones. I just say challenging because they're older.
Yeah.
Not, you know, they're just older. Like
they're clunky. Like if you don't like turn-based experiences or like, you know, inventory management or not inventory management, just if you don't like menus, you know, you're not going to have a good time there.
It's the same. People ask what's the best Resident Evil game to sort of, if you've never played one, you know, I always say, well, start with Resident Evil 2 Remake, like, you know, go for the most accessible modern one that is like not confusing.
I mean,
And then if it really hooks you, then you can go and dive into something where you're a little bit more, okay, I'll be a little lenient towards these jankier older systems.
Yeah, I played 15, I really loved it. Mm-hmm. And I think it was because it didn't really have any baggage to it. Like it felt like it could have been a new franchise.
Exactly.
Like it was such a huge departure from what Final Fantasy was up until that point. And it's crazy to think like FF7 at one point was like that. Where it was like, it's like, oh, this isn't fantasy anymore. This is like weird diesel punk, you know, future stuff it still has cactus people in it, you know? but yeah, it's, again, it's like, as far as what this franchise is, it's had so many little strange, you know, reinventions and departures. And it's, you know, we talked about this a while ago, or I guess after the state of play or whatever, but how like there's something almost kind of like magical about 16 because it is like it doesn't have any preconceived notions.
Yeah.
Like it's a totally fresh start because, and it's for, I mean, for the better part of, you know, a decade and change, they've kind of been going back to the same, you know, the same old stuff and kind of dusting off familiar things. And I don't know, like I messed around with what was it, 13?
Mm-hmm.
Which, and that's one of those ones where it's like, oh no, well, like once you get through the first 40 hours of the, it opens up and it's like, okay. And then there's two more. Apparently the third one's really good, but you have to play the first two to get to it. And it's kind of like, I don't know. That was the last time Final Fantasy tried to sort of reinvent itself and to try something new. But I really love 15. I'm gonna back Lucy on this. I think 15 or remake.
And I think 15 has enough, you know, it was a reinvention of sorts, but it still has those Final Fantasy bones, you know, the weird characters, the strange eccentricity of like the pot noodles. It's just very, you know, Final Fantasy is a really eccentric Japanese series and I love that about it. And so, yeah, I think 15 is a great place to start, then move to 7 Remake. And then, yeah,
also,
then you can be more forgiving with some of the older entries, which are great.
Playing 15 this far since it launched I kind of want to go back to it. It's got to be so much better because when it first came out, like the whole thing is it was sort of an open world game. It was like, you can run around and go wherever.
Yeah.
You're on a road trip. But if
with the boys,
you get a flying car, your car can fly. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. If you land it anywhere but on the road, it will explode. Like that was the thing they had early on. And then they were like, we should probably address that. Also, let's give it monster truck tires. Why the F not? You know?
I actually never played 15, so I should probably go do that.
Yeah,
at some
you
point
should.
Too.
I think you would really dig it.
Especially now that they added all the DLC, like which filled in story gaps that I know people complain about at launch, where it's like essentially some chapters seemed like they were missing for people.
There's one chapter that just flat out sucked when at launch. It was just really bad.
Yeah, they seem to have addressed all that. So Victoria 15 might be a good starting place, especially because it is on PS Plus, both the collection if you're just a basic essential subscriber, but 15, I think the older versions of like 7, 8 remastered, 9, 10, 10.2, and 12 are all part of PlayStation Plus new to a certain extent. So if you want Final Fantasy and you're subscribed, that is a very good place to go to if you want some of those. But I'm excited. I loved Remake, even though I know a lot of Final Fantasy VII fans are like, you played and you didn't play the original. You must have no idea what's going on. And I was like, I read a wiki for like 5 minutes. Also, I know the biggest story reveal because it's, you know, the story twist that everyone talks about.
Yeah, also, if they didn't like want you to play it, they probably wouldn't have made it accessible for you. It's there, play it.
I got enough, and I think once you know the layered meeting, it becomes really more interesting, and it is probably the only thing I can think of right now that is almost like a meta-textual commentary on sequels and remakes.
Yeah,
but it's cool in that way, and I think even if you don't have that layer, it's just a really pretty like such good combat in that game.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone.
1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, yeah. But that wasn't the only sequel RPG news we got this week. Literally simultaneously at the same time this was happening, the Final Fantasy stream, at the same time there was a Dragon's Dogma announcement reveal showcase, which I want to preface came a couple days after a Capcom event where they could have announced it, but they held a special Dragon's Dogma reveal video.
Do they want
it.
This thing to fail? Like, I
don't know. I'm very confused about it. But anyway, Dragon's Dogma is a very, very beloved, though, I guess, somewhat niche RPG.
I would say niche. I never played it. It came out,
10 years ago.
12?
Yeah. It came out in a weird spot. I played a bit of it. I guess I sort of did like a not great review of it. I don't know. Like, it was basically a very post-launch preview where I played a good chunk of it and was like, here are my thoughts on it, which I feel bad calling that a review, but like, it's mechanically, I love this game so much. Mm-hmm. It has I was talking to some friends about it and someone pointed out that it kind of did what Breath of the Wild did before Breath of the Wild, because there's a lot of, you can climb a lot of stuff in this.
Yeah,
like there's this kind of got that Shadow of the Colossus like climbing enemies approach. It does a bunch of really interesting novel stuff, and it came out kind of at an interesting time because it was like right when, like, it was immediately post Skyrim, so people were obviously comparing it to that, and it was also kind of, you know, following the original Dark Souls, and I think it was, I guess Witcher 2 was out at that point, so it was kind of an interesting time for what, you know, AAA RPGs were doing. And this one, it's got this pawn system where basically you create like NPC party members, and then you can like share them over the internet. And it's really funny because if you have like really sexy ones, they'll come back like super leveled up, because dudes are like, yeah, I want to hire these babes to be in my party. But like, I had like a 7-foot-tall dude modeled after Lemmy Kilmeister from Motorhead, and he'd be like, oh, nobody wants to hang out with me. But it's really funny. Deliberately. My favorite thing is you can basically pick up enemies or like animals and stuff. Like, there's snakes, you can pick up snakes and throw them at people.
I love it.
And there's like, there's pigs, and I forget, like, you can't pick up the pigs, but you can climb onto them, but they're like smaller than you, so you're just like hunched onto this thing. I'm talking about the most reductive, idiotic sides of this game, but I also just rebought it on Xbox because it's on sale, so I'm gonna go back and check it out. But it's going to be really interesting to see what this game looks like, as it's running on the RE engine. Isn't
so
it?
Yeah, Dragon's Dogma 2, they didn't show anything about it, but announced it during this anniversary event. And yeah, the only thing I think we know is that it's running on the RE engine, which is used for all the remakes and is mm-hmm. beautiful. It's a really gorgeous engine, but we don't have any other information besides a logo worn on a shirt.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's how you know a game is real.
Do you think they could have revealed this worse? Like, they didn't have anything to show, and they did it at the same time as like one of the most anticipated announcements of the generation, maybe.
It's a pretty weird one. It's a weird one because it's a game in general that I think has survived so much on word of mouth, and the like people who love it really, really love it. I know our producer Red loves it. I know a few other like critics and games journalists who adore this game, but it's not, I think it was one, like you were saying, that kind of got buried, but was ahead of its time mm-hmm. in many ways. And so maybe this reveal isn't the greatest, but I also think when you don't have any gameplay to show, like that's when it's going to matter for a wider audience, is when they can see what Dragon's Dogma 2 plays like. Mm-hmm.
If they were selling a t-shirt, that would be a good reveal, but it's a video game, so maybe, I don't know, sit on it for a little while.
Yeah.
Hold up for Gamescom or something.
I get why for like the anniversary of it all, but yeah, it was a weird, like, why wasn't this at the Capcom showcase that happened a couple days earlier?
Right.
Look, if I was celebrating my wedding anniversary and I like opened my blazer and I was like, I remembered your anniversary, but I forgot a gift, my wife would be mad at me. It's just kind of a weird way to go about that.
It is a weird way to go about it, and it was sort of a strange, like, two Final Fantasy trailers popping up everyone was excited for, and then a t-shirt on the side.
It is the sequel to the remake of one of the most beloved RPGs ever, and they're like, well, we'll announce it, our sequel to a weird, like, deep cut kind of cult favorite game that probably didn't sell too well. And we're going to do it at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would have worked so well as an end to that Capcom showcase where it was like, you just saw a new RE4, and if you want more about an upcoming sequel in a beloved franchise, here you go. Mm-hmm. And then they just announce it there. But it is coming. I'm interested to try it. Like you said, the first game is super cheap on sale, I think, in most places these days. I'd like to give it a try because I've only heard good things.
It's also, it's Dark Arisen, which is kind of like a next-gen remake thing. And I think they did some like weird little quality of life things to tweak it. I remember one thing that really sucked is basically fast travel is like a special treat you get at the very end of the game, as opposed to like a thing that makes it easier to play the freaking game.
Oh yeah.
Like you had to spend like $1 million to get like a single use rock that let you go back to your home base to like upgrade your crap. I don't know.
Yeah. That is like a paying for fast travel in Horizon was never my favorite thing to do. So yeah. Hopefully they've learned, especially after a decade, but yeah, it is a beloved game. I'm excited to hear more about it, but yeah, two big RPG sequels plus Crisis Core as well, the remake coming. So a lot to look forward to.
Oh, I just remember this. If you're watching the video that we got gameplay up right now, there's a bunch of like manticores and chimeras and stuff in this game where it's like three different animals glued together, like the Bremontown musicians. And I think you could attack different parts of them, but it like treats it like you're fighting three animals at once, where it's like, you've hurt the goat. And it's like, well, there's still a lion and a crab attached to it. Like, what am I supposed to do with this?
I'm sorry to say, it does look like one of the animals is mounting the other animal. It doesn't look like...
Yeah, that's why I'm trying to knock it off. Get off of him.
It doesn't look like they're joined. It looks like you're interrupting a mating ritual right now.
You might have been. I don't know the game well enough to say either way. Mm-hmm. So Dragon's Dogma fans, please let us know if that's what the subtext is.
All jokes aside, I think this sequel is in a really, really good spot, assuming it's actually a cool, interesting, good game.
Yeah.
But the success of Elden Ring, like I think a lot of people who got into Elden Ring are going to be like, okay, what next? And going into older FromSoft stuff after Elden Ring, I think is going to be really tricky. But to jump into something like, you know, a next-gen Dragon's Dogma sequel could be huge.
Yeah.
Like that could be a really good thing for it. So I don't know. Let's hope it comes out in the next 5 years. You know,
yeah,
that'd be dope.
5 seems like a good trajectory based on the way we see reveals these days and the level of what you see. But yeah, two exciting games to look out for in the nearer term, and hopefully one later on. But another game that, of course, continues to pop up as one we want to look forward to in the near term, but don't know if we will, is God of War Ragnarok, which has always been confirmed for a 2022 release date. There has not been announced changes to that, but it's also been very silent for that game. Mm-hmm. So naturally everyone worries. But this story is again another reminder of don't necessarily believe everyone who just tweets a thing out about a game and what's happening. But anyway, all these rumors started going around that God of War had been delayed. Some of it was due to people thinking internal release date changes either on the PSN store or in like third-party retailers was suggesting this move and whatnot. Anyway, both Bloomberg and IGN's own sources report that even though there's not been a formal release date announced, God of War still seems to be on track for this year. Bloomberg first reported this, and then our sources corroborated it. But originally, there were allegedly plans internally for a September release, but it was then internally pushed till November.
Okay.
So as of right now, as far as we know, again, nothing is announced. And I think Bloomberg both said this, and we've said this before, until you have the game, it's understandable to not be sure when you're going to get it, especially because dev cycles move so much. Everyone is still dealing with hybrid or remote work. Like all these factors come up in game development. So it's natural that things might get pushed. But as of now, God of War seemingly will come out in November.
It's just so funny that, you know, news is created on top of like these very shaky rumors at best.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like someone being like, well, I think it's delayed and I'm going to tweet it out. because my cousin's uncle who works at Sony said, you know, and it's just, it, and then you sort of have to go in and
yeah.
corroborate. But yeah, you're right, Dorno. Like, I think ultimately this isn't saying that it absolutely will 100% come out in November yeah. because things do move. I think game development right now, as you say, is in such a weird place. And everyone is really, really conscious of crunch, you know, yeah. And I the worst thing would obviously be that team crunching, that becoming public, it all, you know, becoming this big sort of mess.
Exactly.
And no one wants that. And so, you know, I would love God of War Ragnarok to come out in November, but I am also not counting on it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I think the best thing to always do when we don't have information is, and it's that frustrating push and pull, because I get why fans want to hear and would want to latch onto a rumor that they see about a game, because they haven't heard anything since last September, other than, you know, the quick anniversary video that Corey put out via Sony Santa Monica of just saying, like, we'll have more to share with you soon, but we don't have it right now. And it's like, I think this is a game where they don't want to drip feed you little bits of information. They know how much people care about this game and are excited.
Yeah.
And they just want to be able to tell you things when it's ready.
Mm-hmm.
But you also, like, you're never going to get companies every couple weeks going like, yep, still ready for 2022. That's just not how the news works for these companies. So I think, you know, it is frustrating as a fan to want to hear more, but not being able to, but until we hear otherwise from official or vetted sources, it's always one of those things where it's like, don't necessarily latch on to everything someone posts on a forum about what the situation is.
I mean, I would prefer this kind of news cycle to, like, or this radio silence to, I don't know, like, there was that awesome Sony presser at E3 that one year that had all of the cool stuff that we could have possibly wanted, and then we spent the next 5 years after that waiting for most of those things to trickle out.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's like, you know, if there's nothing to say, don't say anything, which is completely, you know, contradictory to my entire approach the podcast, but you know, it's weird for there to be like, oh, it's been delayed, but there's no release date. Like, it makes sense for them to have an internal target release date with the understanding that it may very well not hit that date. It's kind of like when you set two alarms and you're like, I'm gonna sleep through the first one,
yeah,
better have a backup. But yeah, I don't know, I'm at this point, I'm like, I have such faith in this game that I'm not really too hung up on it.
Yeah,
when it comes out, I'm gonna play it. It's going to take priority over whatever the hell else is happening that week. So, like, yeah, you know,
it's also a game I don't want to see much more.
Completely.
I am very fine if all we get is one announcement trailer alongside the release date, maybe one, like, here's the state of play where they explain some of the new features and that's it. I probably wouldn't, like, if I wasn't covering it probably for the show, whenever that happens, I probably wouldn't watch that state of play because I just want to go in cold.
They were super quiet with it prior to the first one coming out.
Yeah.
Like, there was the giant chunk of gameplay that leaked, and that almost seemed like too good to be true. And I remember, like, going into that game, we were all like, is this going to be good? Like,
yeah.
Is this, it looks cool. And then it, you know, of course, was just absolutely phenomenal game.
There was a pretty thorough PR beat for it, though.
Close to it. There was a preview beat where I think Andrew and a couple other people had gotten, like, a couple hours hands-on with it. Mm-hmm. But yeah. And that was, of course, there needed to be, like, a proof of what they're doing with this new version of it. But we know what that proof is now. It's that game they released in 2018.
Exactly.
It's kind of wild that it is such a known quantity in terms of quality. And I hope I don't eat those words. But, like, the first one, we were like, it's kind of weird to think back on it because we were skeptical.
Absolutely. And with good reason. I mean, it was God of War, a series that was a lot of fun, but no one took mega seriously because it was just sort of dumb fun with, like, lots of titties and, you know, like, it was Kratos as this gruff kind of non-character.
And then, like, all of us tap X to do boners or whatever.
And then all of a sudden someone took it seriously and so did we. And it was a real surprise, but you're right. You know, what we've seen so far is very much in step with the first game.
Yeah. So it's one where I know everyone's excited and hopeful and wants that information. I think we will get it whenever they're ready. And if that means potentially November, obviously Sony has not confirmed these reports at all, but if that means November, great. Currently, I was looking at some of the release calendars. I think there's, like, two games announced for November right now, one of them being Pokemon. So November is a pretty...
It's a weird year, right?
Yeah, September and October have filled out a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
We're starting to actually get, like, a fall release. But yeah, November is quiet.
I think a lot of people paid close attention to what happened with Cyberpunk.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it really, I mean, it's you know, it's also the reality that a lot of things got shaken up by people working remotely and COVID and stuff. And there's, I'm sure there's issues with supply chain shortages and, you know, nonsense. And
yeah,
you, nobody wants to work at the dang GameStop anymore or whatever. Like there's a lot of weird factors at play. And it's, there's really, I don't think there's much harm in considering how fast you can like disseminate information. Is there that much harm in just like holding off on a release date until you're sure you can hit it?
No,
like, obviously we want to, you know, we want to block out a schedule to be like, oh, I'm going to take this day off of work so I can fight monsters or whatever. But it's, yeah, it's, yeah.
For them, other than release years, I think being good targets for shareholders, that's why we get years. Like, yeah, like that's why God of War was originally a 2021 date. Probably also they optimistically thought they could hit it, but you saw all these games get 2021 dates because it was just the start of COVID. We didn't know how long work from home was going to last. They need to put out dates to satisfy, here's all the money we're going to make in the months to come. Yeah. But I think it is good of them. I think, you know, PlayStation has before had games where it was like, here's the release date. Oh, that release date has now even moved just by a couple weeks. Like, yeah, that has happened with some games. And I think with a game this big for them, they don't want to put that date out there until they absolutely know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine with me. I totally understand everyone's like, oh, but I just want to know about this game, but we'll get there. If we're going to know about God of War, and then it'll be like, why? Oh yeah, it's God of War.
Yeah. 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 And stay off Twitter, you know, just like,
it is better without.
That's, I think that's good advice across the board.
Just in general.
What's that? Yeah. What are you doing on there? There was nothing good to do.
Yeah. No one, it's just that, such a dark, yeah, crappy place to get information from. So.
Unless I see a movie, I turn it off after work every day. I've been doing that, yeah, for the last few months, and I'm like infinitely more at peace.
Yeah, anyway.
Things. Yeah. Well, God of War, whenever we get to play it, will be very exciting. But yeah.
I was going
to
piggyback on that. I, yeah, love that, like, Take-Two basically had to come out and be like, yes, there's going to be a GTA 6. Shut up. Stop, yeah, commenting, yeah, on everything that Rockstar posts on Instagram. Like, yeah, they're going to make it. What do you think? They're going to make 5 of something, the 5th one being the most successful thing anyone's ever made, and, yeah, they're just going to stop there?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, they could put GTA 5 on the next 3 generations of consoles. But like, maybe they're going to make another thing.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
Hazard a guess.
Just maybe.
Yeah, but we know the team. I know people, speaking of Twitter, though, I do know Corey Barlog. Obviously, he's not the director for this one, but did recently reappear on Twitter. And oh, has that excited the family.
Oh, of course it so, has.
Corey, my condolences to your mentions probably already. But it's also good to see you back on there, sir. But yeah, it'll be fun in the lead up. I'm very excited when we get to talk about that game, when it's something we can play. But for now, what you can play or check out of older games is the new PlayStation Plus that launched this past Monday. It feels like a year ago already, but after months of lead up and rumors, Peppers is just snoozing over here.
Is he? Oh, okay, him. Cool. Yeah, I was like, where'd my dog go?
The new PlayStation Plus and its new tiers are out in North America. I think Europe is still waiting for those, but it's out in North America after a slow rollout everywhere. The full lineups for North America are out. I think it actually ended up being a little bit more than they had said. I think it's like somewhere near 800 total games, mm-hmm, instead of 700. But luckily, on the good side of things, old games, this was sort of up for debate what would happen here, but old games in North America at least are running in 60 hertz.
Yeah, and we've definitely heard the reports about them not running at 60 hertz elsewhere, because they're using the PAL.
Yeah,
versions that are running at 50 hertz. So yeah, condolences.
That is, in some territories you're not getting the most optimized version of those games, unfortunately.
So 60 hertz is good.
Yes.
Higher hertz is, you want, is more better. Hertz.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's how you get the points to go rent a car.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I was waiting for that joke. He's gonna do
a
rental car joke. Ooh, it's coming.
I'm going to an airport.
How do I get a hertz donut?
Anyway, so we know that about that. We did get the full lineup. It is, obviously, in North America, we do have the option and benefit of PS3 streaming as a thing there, but also, you know, the detraction of not having downloads, mm-hmm, for PS3 games, which is, it continues to be a bummer. But we got the library. It's a pretty thorough one for PS4 and PS5 in particular. I'm not going to go through and list everything, but obviously the full list is on PlayStation's website, so you can go check that out for the tiers. My thought after checking it out for a little bit, I don't know if either of you have had time to look at the libraries or just what's on offer.
Yeah.
My current thinking about it is, I think the extra tier, I hate the naming, but the extra tier, which is the middle tier, which gets you 400 plus PS4 and PS5 games, is great.
Yeah.
If you are just getting a PS5 or a PS4 even, if you're just jumping into the library, if you've missed out on first party games, that is a really, really great subscription. It's TBD on what it looks like for the future, but I think it's a really good start. The premium tier is not worth it to me. Mm-hmm. You're getting right now 10-ish PlayStation 1 games, PS2 2 games in a good way. A lot of them are the remasters that are available on PS4, so you're getting better quality versions there, but it's like a mixture of some things. PS3 is obviously streaming only, and it's lacking some stuff that was even on PS Now.
I think my question with that tier is, who is it for?
Yeah.
Because, you know, if it's for people like us who have grown up with PlayStation and honestly want to jump into like a nostalgia tier, right?
Yeah.
Then you'd want that older library to be far more fleshed out than it is. With, you know, we've already played PS4 and PS5 games, you know, we've got that library already. Like, so I'm not quite sure who that tier is necessarily for, because if you're new to PlayStation, are you really going to want to jump in and play like Abe's Odyssey? Like, do you know what I mean? It's just like, I cannot figure out who it's for. And unless they're going to really go hard in on that old PS1, PS2 library and flesh it out regularly.
Yeah.
I'm just confused. You know, I was waiting for Metal Gear Solid, for Silent Hill. Do you know what I mean? Like,
no,
that's
totally
the kind of stuff that I wanted to see. I wanted to jump back in and have all those nostalgia feelings, but there's just not enough there to justify it for me.
Well, that's the weird issue, is a lot of the stuff we associate as being like classic PlayStation games belongs to somebody else.
Of
like,
course.
They don't have the keys necessarily. Yeah. I was baffled by I feel like it's a pretty weak lineup for PS2 stuff.
They're mostly relying on the remasters.
Yeah,
which is
there was weird ones that kind of remasters, like Racer Revenge that just dropped. Like, there was came. I don't think you could buy that initially. It came as like an exclusive on either a version of Battlefront 2, or you had to buy the Star Wars PlayStation 4 Pro or something. Like, it was something really weird where it was like, this is you get a free PS2 game, and it's like, all right, you just had that in the back there. Like,
yeah, I think, I mean, again, the tier names kill me.
Yeah,
they just won't stick in my head.
Well, I've talked about it. Why didn't they just do the trophy names? Why was it just not the bronze, silver?
Oh my
actually,
god!
That would make
it's just
so
there.
It's just there. But I would say that like, if you are new to PlayStation, like you've never had a PlayStation console before, I think that like the entry level tiers are good value. Like, that's great. It's a fantastic offering for new people to PlayStation. For those early adopters, such as everyone on this panel, I'm not sure what the value there is.
Yeah, but for that extra tier, excuse me, which comes with the PS4 and PS5 games, like, obviously, we know there are supply chain issues, so a lot of people are going to be getting PS5s over the coming months. And to be able to day one play Returnal, Miles Morales, Death Stranding Director's Cut, Ghost of Tsushima Director's Cut, Demon Souls Remake, all these other great first-party games that have already come out, you're in a really good place to be able to jump in day one. Like, it's a no-brainer to me, and especially if you've missed more than 2 of those first-party games, get it for a month or two,
totally,
and you're sold. And you also have all the PS4 games, so you have, like, the Shadow of the Colossus Remake, you have the entirety of Housemarque's catalog from the last couple generations, you have... there's a weird one. Excuse me, I'm actually going to read because it came in via a question. Grant wrote in and said, love the podcast, been listening for some time now, and finally writing in for your opinions on something I don't understand. I'm UK-based, so still waiting on the PSN Silver, Gold, and Platinum tiers. That's what I think they should be called.
Did you just steal it from that guy?
No, we've talked about it on the show. Grant got it from us.
Okay, I haven't watched for a hot second. That's true.
How dare you, Lucy?
You're a fake Beyond fan.
I was always going to upgrade as I have missed some games, Spider-Man being an example of one I missed. However, why is the original only the PS4 version that's available? I have managed to get a hold of a PS5 and want to catch up on some games, but this is a weird one where if this is how games are rolling out, I think I'd just prefer to buy the game to get the PS5 version. Do you think there's a reason for this, or why we're not getting some updates? Spider-Man is a weird one. So, like, you can, if you're subscribed, you do get the PS5 version of Miles Morales, but you don't get the PS5 version of Spider-Man, because that one is oddly locked behind. You can only get it if you buy Miles Morales on PS5, or if you buy an upgrade attached to it. Like, it's not a game you can just
locked behind a deal.
Basically, my theory is that one in particular, it's coming to PC. The remastered version is coming to PC in August. I wouldn't be shocked if they unlock it for PS5 players at that point.
Right.
But that is a weird exception to the rule. But generally, like, you can get the Ghost of Tsushima PS5 version. You can get the Death Stranding PS5 version. So that is a weird one. But again, it brings up these questions of, like, what gets slotted at what tier. Some of the PS2 classics that we've been saying are the PS4 versions, which are great, but then shouldn't they count as PS4 games technically? Yeah. But they don't for some reason for some of them. It's a weird state for the, I think, Lucy, as you said, like the classic stuff, for like the nostalgia tier to want to buy in. I don't think it's worth it yet.
I don't think it's worth it yet. With all that said, like, I know that I'm, you know, talking about the negatives, but I still think it's a great improvement on what was the PlayStation Plus whole thing. And it's all about quality of life and communication at this point, right? Like, as long as PlayStation keeps adding to it, as long as there is communication to the fans there, I think that there's great potential. I think as a launch lineup, it's, you know, I have questions, but I'm still really excited to see where it goes. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Game Pass launch lineup sucked.
Exactly. There you go. Look at it now.
Nintendo Online, like, we were like, what? I think it was like a bunch of NES games that most people, like, there were a few good ones and then some really crappy ones. And then gradually there have been like they added Pokemon Snap today or whatever. It takes a minute. And I don't know why, because you can pirate all this stuff real quick, but I guess they have to figure it out.
Yeah.
The thing that I keep coming back to is you spend so much time kind of looking at the different tiers and like kind of weighing the different options that you come away with a kind of, or at least personally, a sense of almost like buyer's remorse or feeling like this is like, it's like, oh, I don't, this, I feel like no matter what I pick, I'm going to feel like I did something wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like if I get the top one, I'm paying too much. If I get the bottom one, I'm missing out. I get the middle one, it feels kind of lopsided.
That's the weird thing for me, is like, I think the extra middle tier is a great value, and I think it is worth it for the people. Like, we're in a fortunate position where we've played stuff for work, and so we've kept up with these games a lot. Not everyone out there has that opportunity, and so if you've missed any first party or good third party indie stuff, it's a really great tier. But you feel weird getting the middle tier, and you're even saying the middle tier is the best option because it's position to not make you think that.
That comes down to the naming, and why I can never remember the names is because they want each name to suggest great value. And if you say the middle tier or silver,
extra is what
it's like. I'll have a small soda, you'll have a medium.
But you know, silver is less than gold, so it's not very good. You know what I mean? I do understand the naming. It's just irritating.
I mean, at the end of the day, the whole thing is it's cheaper than Game Pass Ultimate, isn't it?
Like, if you buy the year version, Game Pass Ultimate doesn't have a yearly price, whereas this does. Right. So it's cheaper to buy that. I forget if Extra on its own is cheaper per month. I'll look
that up. I mean, they're frequently putting that, you know, Game Pass on sale. That is the thing I'm curious about. Like, will Sony allow this to go on sale? Will there be like gift cards that go on Black Friday deals? Is it possible to get like a weird bundle where you get a, you know, PS5 and an extra controller and then 6 months of premium plus ultra platinum, whatever it's called?
And so extra in the US at least does cost $15 a month monthly, so I believe the same as Game Pass.
Right.
Obviously the difference here not being that you don't get first party, that's the middle one.
Okay.
That's the one that has the really great library that is worth it, but of course we're not getting first party stuff day and date. You're more buying that, I think, as a historical first party thing.
Okay.
We do know that at least so far, and I think this is, Lucy, like you were saying, it's going to matter what the recurring updates look like.
Yeah.
We know Stray is going to launch into the extra and premium tiers day one next month, which is great.
Awesome.
How much does that cost?
Stray?
Yeah.
I'm going to look it up. But
I would pay $100 for that cat game.
It is currently, this is going off of Steam, it will be $30.
Okay.
So,
bargain. Bargain to play.
That's 2 months of PS Plus.
Yeah.
But basically, we know that they're launching a pretty marquee indie game for them into this service. So presumably...
House Marquee.
I mean, legitimately, if you've never played House Marquee games or Returnal is your first one, you get all of them with Extra. And there's so many great games. But anyway, we know they're doing that. And so if we see that continued cadence, like Roller Drome, which looked cool from the State of Play, could launch into that in August. We don't know. Mm-hmm. But like, we could potentially get games monthly that are new. And I think that's going to matter to people staying as subscribers. I think there's, you know, this is a great thing for someone who just buys a PS5, but they need to give reason for them to keep it beyond the first 3 months of
beyond
owning a PS5. So
I'm so jealous of anybody who's jumping on a PlayStation for the first time right
now.
It sucks. Like it's a very extremely first world problem for us to be like, oh, I've played all these great games. This isn't a good value for me.
I've had every single console since the number one.
Yeah, but I don't know, like getting to jump in and check out like all the, you know, the exclusives that you missed out on. That's huge. And again, it would be cool if it was like, hey, day one, you can get the remastered Spider-Man or whatever. Like that would be nice to have that in there, but you can only play the PS4 version with all the advantages of the PS5.
It's a weird one there, but yeah, at the very least, like just from PlayStation Studios alone, if you jump in and you never got to play Bloodborne, Concrete Genie, Demon Souls, Ghost of Tsushima, God of War, Gravity Rush 1 and 2, Infamous Games, Spider-Man and Miles Morales, like the list goes on in terms of like first party stuff that if you've never gotten to play, day one, you have an amazing lineup. You have several months worth, I think like a year subscription. It would take you a while to knock through all these games.
Yeah. Again, great value if you're just buying a PlayStation.
Yeah, exactly. And like really solid third-party stuff as well. Like if you didn't play indies like Celeste, Ashen, The Artful Escape, like there's a whole bunch that are great in there as well, plus third-party stuff. Assassin's Creed Valhalla, there's a good Ubisoft representation because it has that Ubisoft Plus part of it. There's some Square Enix games. There's some WB games. So it is hopeful. It is a good start. At extra. It is a rough start at premium.
What's going on with... why isn't WB putting the first Mordor game on there?
I don't know.
I don't want to play the second one.
Yeah.
I think they doubled down on all the stuff I didn't like about the first one. And like, I really want to just go back and just jump around, ride those weird like pig dogs around, kill a bunch of orcs, and they just...
I mean, that whole series was like, hey, we got... The first one is great. I loved it. The second one, they improved over time with some of the issues with like DLC and microtransactions. And it was still a fun playing game, but I fell off it. But it's like, we had those two great games, and then they just went silent. And now we know that Dev is working on the Wonder Woman game. But it was like, oh, we had a great opportunity to keep doing Lord of the Rings games.
And such what a happened? Great system.
Yeah.
Like,
we all thought that was
going to
be just the next big thing.
Yeah.
Like, that was going to be it, and it was going to be everywhere. And we just don't have that, which is bizarre.
Yeah. Well, and then they trademarked it. And so now you have to buy it.
I really, really hope that Wonder Woman I've said this before. I really hope it has the Nemesis system, which is just regular men. It's just like ordinary dudes.
Dave.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Dave so Frank Bob. The man.
Oi, Wonder Woman. He's just like
Steven the Dishonest.
Anyway, we'll see what happens there. But yeah, I'm curious what people who have been subscribing. I tweeted about it earlier this week, and there are people, I've seen a lot of people who are like, I'm jumping in, I missed a bunch of games, this has been great for that. There's a lot of people who are like, I'm on premium, I'm glad some of these games are there, but where are the rest of the classics that I want?
Yeah.
Like you said, Max, some stuff is just locked behind third parties who might not want to put it or have it available to put on here. Hopefully we see that tier increase in particular. I also don't love that game trials are at the highest tier.
That seems completely weird.
Like,
yeah, I think we said this
when it was
announced, and we sort of were just like, that's the whole point of a game trial, is it should be accessible to everyone, right? Like,
even putting it at the extra tier would feel a little bit better, because at least it's tied to PS4 and PS5 games, so it would make sense there. But like, the whole point of them is to make you want to go buy the full game.
If you book our premium business executive suite, you will find one free AOL 1000 hours disc lying on your bed, and you can go online for 1000 hours.
There is someone listening to this show who doesn't know that we used to get discs to make our internet work.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a weird part about life. Anyway, in terms of what you can get a disc for coming up soon, that's the only transition I have there, is that we're getting...
how I've missed your transition.
Unfortunate leaks, including literally the day of, we did get final official confirmation at the end of last week, so just wanted to touch on it very briefly, but we did get word that The Last of Us remake is official. It is being made by Naughty Dog. It's coming out September 2nd. It includes the base The Last of Us game that you know, but fully essentially rebuilt for PS5 in terms of art, animation. They went back and sort of rescanned the performances of the actors from the original stuff, updated the models to become closer to the expressions and the minute stuff that they were doing. We know that they've improved the gameplay in some ways. We don't know the extent to which, but we obviously know that they have learned a lot. Like, The Last of Us Part 2, obviously we talk about it on a big storytelling level. I think a thing that doesn't get talked about as much is that it really made really good improvements to the stealth and the combat of that series.
Oh my God, and significantly
huge, but in ways that are like, it was funny because I came away from our preview and I remember talking about this back then of Part 2, and it's like, you can't really put on the back of the box, more interesting sneaking or like more precise combat, but it works. Like the depths and levels of the AI that they changed, the stealth combat, all that stuff was really
that game is a flat out Metal Gear Solid 2, straight up down to being it being divisive and having a switcheroo with who you're playing as, but like it also adds like crazy AI and a whole bunch of like really cool systems. Now I'm wondering if the remake, whatever we're calling it, part one.
Part one is what it's officially known as. Yeah.
If that's going to be like a Twin Snakes scenario. I don't think it will be because they're actually, you know, the in-house team is handling it and they've learned from that mistake. But like the fact that that game was designed for those controls and those systems. So they're going to there's clearly going to have to be a lot of tweaking going on under the hood to be like, oh, like you, I mean, you have different, I can't imagine they're going to like bring over like all the traversal changes and everything.
Well, I mean, are they still going to have the ladders?
Or the rafts.
Yeah.
And having like they could make changes like that. We don't know to what extent that stuff has been made. And so that's the interesting question right here is like how much of a different experience will that stuff be? Because you're right, like going prone in part two completely changes your stealth options alone.
Yeah.
So how is that gonna work? Will there be going prone or will it just be some evolutions there? But even the AI, like I love The Last of Us 1. I think it is the masterpiece that it was, and it has stuck with me for so long. It's why I love Part 2 so much. But like the stealth gameplay there is, I think, notoriously something that people have learned to cheese. Like there's all the gifs you see of people like having Ellie running around and getting caught, but no one notices her and things like that. If they're adding in new AI to be better tracking you and the world in general, if they're smarter AI, they will have to update your skill set as well.
Yeah.
And so that's going to make playing those scenarios different. Like it's going to be really interesting.
I mean, I think that when they say rebuilt from the ground up, like they're making a big promise there. Like that's not just, okay, we're going to try and work around this trick. It's not like a, you know, a square peg round hole scenario. I think they're really they're going to change it. Yeah. Like they're going to change the fundamental way that you play that game. Personally, that's fine by me because I loved The Last of Us Part One. I loved The Last of Us, the original Last of Us. For its story, like I don't particularly have like fond memories of its combat or anything like that. I mean, you know, aside from the sort of the clickers and the, you know, the horror, the tone of the gameplay.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's they're making some big promises here. I think it's going to be a totally different experience.
Yeah, and I hope so. Max, go ahead.
Yeah, I hope that price tag reflects how much work has actually gone into this. And I mean, I assume it does, you know, like this isn't, I don't think they're going to just full on nickel and dime us. But I mean, to go back to like the Twin Snakes thing, like that whole deal with that was like, they took the first person shooting edition and like the crawling and climbing stuff from Metal Gear Solid 2 and just dumped it into Metal Gear Solid 1, which was the architecture for that game entirely was not made for that.
No.
Yeah.
And so like, there were weird new ways you could cheese everything. And like, I'm actually like really excited about this because I want to see exactly if it's from the ground up, like, has they completely redesigned it? Like at this point,
I mean, I would assume yes. Like there's that's the thing. Like I think it's going to be a different game. It's still going to have, you know, I'm imagining it more like a Resident Evil 2. I mean, obviously with less remixing, that much of an overhaul. Yeah. Like I'm truly thinking that this is going to be way more in step with part two. Otherwise I wouldn't have called it part one.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's also, so yeah, like Max, as you alluded to, this, it will be a full price game. It is $70, which has caused some frustration from players because the remastered game for PS4 is $20 that you can buy or will be part of PS Plus and whatnot. This won't be on day one. It comes with whatever the full campaign will look like and the Left Behind DLC, which is great, but not any multiplayer, because as we also learned last week, they are full steam ahead on their multiplayer Last of Us World project. We got a piece of concept art, which was beautiful. It showed, I think, San Francisco that they're fighting in, but they were like, we'll show you more information next year on that one. So
that image was to shut up people who were mad that the Last of Us Part One does not include the multiplayer.
Factions. And I think it makes sense because they want to put all of that, if they're going to put effort into maintaining multiplayer servers and building out a new system, they want to do in the new thing that's going to be around for 5+ years or whatever their goals are, rather than a better version of the old game from 9 years ago.
It also very much makes me think that there's going to be a part three.
Oh yeah, me too.
You know what I mean? Like it feels like they wouldn't be investing this much in a complete overhaul unless they have a part three in mind.
Yeah, no, totally. Me too.
I imagine they're going to have a sort of tricky time marketing part one just because of everything we've kind of talked about here to specifically to gamers. But I can't imagine that's going to be an issue after the HBO show drops, assuming that actually hits the notes it needs to.
Well, and I think that is a big reason also why this thing exists.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, totally.
And we also know it's coming to PC is the thing of like The Last of Us 1. It's a huge game. It's one of like Sony's, I think, best selling first party games. Like it sold tremendously well. Part 2 has sold very well. Obviously, it is a beloved, well-known franchise, but there's going to be a whole new audience of people who will watch the TV show.
Yes.
Because HBO can draw 20 plus million people with their biggest shows. And I do think they want this to be a big show for them.
Yeah.
And so that is a whole audience that will see this and be like, oh, it's based on a game. Oh, I can go buy it right now.
And I can go buy a PlayStation 5 to play it.
Yeah. Right? And it looks beautiful instead of showing. I think the remaster still holds up well for what it was. But you show that to someone who doesn't know games as well, or to someone who wants the brand spanking newest thing. Mm-hmm. And they're going to see this version and be like, that's what I need to go buy.
Yeah. Also a ton of accessibility stuff that they're throwing in, exactly, and all the stuff from 2, which is smart.
So, you know? Good.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. I think they said over 60 accessibility features will be coming with this. And part 2, I think, is one of the most notably accessible games out there when it comes to this third person space.
Unless you're mad at it, in which case it's real hard to get into.
Yeah. But I think at the end of the day, for people who are like, I don't want to pay $70 for a remake, you're allowed to not spend the money that you don't want to spend. I get that. For people who especially can only spend so much money per year, chances are this will be on sale. You'll find a sale through Wario 64 or IGN deals. It will happen. Like that will happen if you don't want to spend it. Like you were saying, Lucy, the work that they say they are doing, that is not a small investment from a team like this. And so I am very curious to see what that all merits out being.
Yeah.
And you know, I am very interested to see what replaying The Last of Us in this reimagined version will be like.
I'm very excited.
Yeah. I'm down to jump into it just because, like, I never finished part 2.
Oh,
like, I keep meaning to kind of go back to it, but at the same time, like, that game dropped when society was crumbling around us. That's like fair. That came out at a very bad time.
It was a tricky time.
And I was like, I don't need this. I'm going to play Animal Crossing. And then I was like, I need to do actual yard work. And I went outside. Yeah. I don't know what to tell you.
Touched some grass.
Yeah. And I ripped it up because it wasn't supposed to be growing there. But no, I don't know. Like, I loved the mechanics that they had there. And I just was, again, like, I know the story was people were mad at it for all sorts of dumb reasons. The thing that kind of balked me was it was just, It's a long game.
It is.
It's very long.
Like, it's really long. And I kind of love that the first one is, I mean, it's not short. It's still like a decent sized game, but it's like, it's manageable, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I feel like a 20-hour game is a weekend, a 40-hour game is a week. Like, it's a different animal, you know?
Yeah.
I've learned with The Last of Us Part 2, especially considering the time that it came out, that everyone's experience of it was very unique. You know, for me, I came out of that game just sort of being like, that was one of the most wonderful things I've played. I can't fathom how anyone can think differently, right? Yeah. But of course, you know, it came out during a really rough time for us all, like mentally, emotionally.
Yeah.
You know, it obviously was divisive for a bunch of reasons. But I how I feel about The Last of Us Part 2. Very passionately.
There are several episodes of Beyond that you can hear Lucy and I be very passionate about that game about if you want to from that time. For me, the first game, like, it's one of the most vivid memories of playing a game, finishing a game. Like, I remember being in my apartment that I was living in New York and finishing that game and just walking out to like my friends in the living room and just being like, I've just been through an ordeal.
Yeah,
like,
this
is my life has changed.
Something.
And they're just watching like Avatar on Netflix, the show, not the movie. I'm sorry. The Last Airbender. And they're like, well, we're watching them do cool. Like,
we're on a real airbender over here.
And I'm like, I've changed as a human being. But so like this game means so much to so many people, including people who made this game. Like I think a thing that I appreciated both of Neil Druckmann's presentation of it and the blog posts that have come out after is they're talking about who the directors are for the remake project. There are people who Last of Us was their first game at Naughty Dog who are part of this project. So it's like, it is a thing that I think means a lot to the people who are making it as well. And so I do think this is a thing, like you're saying, Lucy, that we probably don't know the full scope of how much has been changed until we get to play it. And like you said, there's a lot of part 2 combat sequences I remember vividly. Some of them are on screen now. I have many fewer of those from the first game.
Yeah, yeah. I love the first game for its story and its characters. I don't particularly remember much of its combat.
So if part 1 elevates that level of it for me, then I can't wait to play it. I'm excited. But we'll see what happens in just 3 months. We're pretty close.
Yeah.
But those were all the big PlayStation topics that I wanted to hit before we get all sappy and emotional. But before we do, just anything anyone's been playing that they want to talk about or shout out? I've
Raising My Child.
That's a good game. That's
I gave up on that game. Months ago. Fortnite?
Yeah.
That's not a joke. I got into Fortnite.
That's weird.
Right?
Oh, I feel weird.
Yeah. I feel so extremely how do you do fellow kids. Like, I feel like that part of Billy Madison, well, really all of Billy Madison where he's an adult man who's in a children's place. Like, that is... But I don't know. I don't know what clicked. I just got into it a
was
couple
Was it the no-build version?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that the reason? Because I know that made a lot of people, like... It lifted a lot of barriers.
Which is stupid. That's not specifically what it is. Mm. Though it is kind of interesting how I think a lot of older players did suddenly get into it again because of that. Because like it's crazy it took them that long that... I love we actually have Fortnite footage. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. This is all captured by me. No, it's not. Yeah. But yeah, no, this is, I mean, I think the no build, it got Mark Medina. He's talked about it on the show. Like he very adamantly was like, I don't want to ever play Fortnite because I hate the building.
Yeah.
And then he got to level 100, which is the end of the base battle pass, within like a month of a like 4 month long season. Like he was obsessed with it.
Wow.
And so he's become full on, like me talking about it a couple times on the show, just got him to try it.
I mean, I jumped into it when it first came. It was really, it's so funny to think about Fortnite, the sort of like road to that. Like that was, that was the first Unreal 4 game announced.
Oh yeah.
And it was, they had this bizarre cinematic, which was eventually for like Fortnite Save the World, which came out and nobody gave it. Like there was this weird 4 month stretch where like, it was like, wow, that game finally came out after being in development for what, 7 years.
Yeah.
And then they were like Battle Royale. And then it was just everything, like that is the biggest game in the universe. And it's kind of crazy to think about, but also jumping into it at launch, I was like, well, this kind of sucks. There's no character creation. And they were like, but what if we charged you for characters? And
it works.
Yeah.
And
I mean, like fast forward, what, 5 years or something into the lifespan. And it's just, it's become this like incredible toy box. And it's like, you know, I feel like it's the difference between, you know, Smash Brothers Ultimate post DLC and like the first one where it's like, there's like, you're like, oh, this is a little roster. Like I like three of these guys, whatever. And now it's like, freaking Moon Knight just shot me.
It's like I play pretty frequently with my partner and a couple friends, and it's one of those things where we the game is malleable as well, because obviously there's the goal of get to be first place in a team or solo or whatever, but you have so many other side challenges. There are now collectibles in the game that are more regular for
it's a game about kit bashing right now.
The like, snap tokens character.
Like I've been jumping around and grabbing, you know, collecting body parts for an action figure.
They've now added that in every season, so it's like there's so much you do when you drop in. It's less about like, let me get to number one for me. It's more like, what are the silly things I'm engaging with that are fun?
I just feel like a decrepit old corpse in between you two.
Well, you'll have to jump into Fortnite with us.
Maybe one day.
But yeah, other than that, I have played a little bit of TMNT Shredder's Revenge.
Ooh, so excited for that. Which, I've got my card.
It's really funny for me. I obviously, there are people out there who are much greater TMNT fans than me, especially on this show and have been on this show. But for me, I loved the arcade game, but I only ever played it alone.
Right.
It was when we had an arcade on the boardwalk in my hometown, and I would go in. It was like when I'd be walking with family on the boardwalk, and my dad would be like, go ahead, here's some quarters, go play. And I'd always come to TMNT. I'd play alone. I'd play as whoever I chose just at random. Since Donatello became my main, because that was just how it happened. But I'm really enjoying it. It is like such a love letter thing, and it's such a cliche, but like they really just flat out went as much as possible. This is the game you think you remember as modern as possible.
Yeah.
And it makes no apologies for that. And it's just delightful. It's colorful. It's silly. The attention to detail in every level is just like staggering. I'm really enjoying it. I don't have enough of an arcade knowledge of those older games because it's been so long since I played them to compare one to one. But this is the sort of game, like if this is what I walked into to play it at the arcade, it's the only thing I'd play.
Yeah.
Like it is just that pretty and special and fun.
It's also just the attention to detail, like beyond the game itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They got like two of the guys from Wu-Tang to record like a Ninja Turtles rap, which is like that. I think anything else that would be completely like corny and like phoned in and like weird. But like there have been various ninja raps, including Vanilla Ice's ninja rap.
Yeah. Infamous.
Like that. Yeah.
Mike Patton does the theme song.
I don't know what to compare that to. Maybe Tarzan Boy at the end of the third movie. I don't know, whatever.
It's one of those cases, and you know, it's hard to get a game like this made, I feel. And it's very telling that it's Devolver, right?
They published it.
Did they publish it?
They published it.
Yes.
It's .emu and it's Tribute Games who developed it. I think they did Streets of Rage 4?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I guess what I'm saying is I feel like it could only have been made at Devolver. Like, it's just such a, it's clearly just people who love the game and love the original, who love the original series so much and like the original game so much and have just had freedom, the freedom to make this.
Well, clearly also the time to polish it.
Right.
You know, because there've been plenty of games that have sort of tried to do something like this and, you know, not stuck the landing because they had to ship it or whatever. Because it's, at the end of the day, it's a licensed game. But like, I love that when we're at the point where people are actually like, oh, maybe the license is valuable and deserves a good game.
Exactly.
And it should have the time and attention it deserves. And the other thing, the collector's edition comes with a coupon for a free personal Pizza Hut pizza.
Yeah.
Which the original NES arcade game did too, which is just like, that's just such a...
It's so smart.
So lovely.
Like, adults had to send emails about that.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't even know who paid for it. Like, who puts the bill there? Like, Nickelodeon? Pizza Hut? I don't know.
Yeah. That's always the funny thing to me now is that TMNT is a Nickelodeon property. I always forget that. But yeah, anyway, this just to clear up for anyone in the comments, Streets of Rage 4 was also .emu, .emu, .demo, whatever. I still don't know the pronunciation, unfortunately, along with Lizard Cube and Guard Crush Games. And this one was, as he said, them and Tribute Games. So yeah. But
no
obviously,
idea who does what there, but I'm glad they're doing it.
A clear love for these old arcade games. And it's cool that they're finding a way to modernize them. But yeah, I definitely recommend, if you want a good interview, shout out to one of our sister shows, you can go over to Nintendo Voice Chat. They spoke with one of the developers on TMNT.
And so we will have a very cool feature on it in the upcoming weeks.
Yes, look forward to that as well if you want to learn some awesome stuff about it. Anyway, with all that all said, Lucy, please don't leave. No, I
time
obviously
to say good
copyright strike. No, of course, Lucy, it feels weird. I have done now several of these goodbye shows for Beyond. It's very strange. And as someone who, like, you are my boss for the last couple of years.
Yes.
We first started working together most closely, I think, doing this show together and just me trying to volunteer for features work here and there. But like, I came to IGN already like adoring the work that you've done at IGN. And then to have been part of a team where I got to see your excellence on display all the time to do these shows with you has been like just such an honor. I think, you know, something that I just want on the record is that truly, I hope you all out there know from Lucy's time on the show, Lucy has been such a tremendously impactful, important part of IGN since she's been here. And it has been just a joy to work with you, to do these shows with you. And I'm going to miss you dearly. I'm so happy for you.
Oh,
but it's just been a joy.
It has honestly been just the most wonderful 3 years. And I will miss you all so much. I can't look at you, either of you.
3 years on the show. You've been here for like what, 11 or something?
I've been here for 10 years.
Yeah.
Of course, a whole bunch of that time was spent in Sydney, in the Sydney
office.
Days away
from retirement.
I truly was. And I'm just going to, I'm going to miss you all so much. Dorno, you are just the most talented, fierce editor, writer, sort of content creator. You're the most like wonderful person to work with. Max, you are just an overwhelming talent, and you could do anything you wanted in the world, I think. And I am just gonna miss you so much. But you know, I'm going publish aside, and I will still be around in games, and I will be back on this show.
You're always welcome back as a guest, as far as I'm concerned, and are a fabric and part of what Beyond has been to me since I started here and since we've been doing the show and since I've been hosting. And it's just, we're going to miss you. I know how much love there is out there for you in the audience as well. I mean, you're the only one to get a special Beyond t-shirt.
Yeah.
The elderly Irish woman
is a joke that's probably no one remembers. And the t-shirt is still on the store. Everyone's like, what the hell is this?
I love that.
The guy who left that original comment, I wonder how he's doing. Yeah.
But yeah, to everyone who's listened to me over the last 10 years, whether it was the original pubcast in Sydney, which was just a drunk fest, but a lot of fun. and of course Beyond, thank you thank you for listening and for reading my reviews and my features and all that sort of thing and the things, the amazing stuff that we've produced as a team, Dorno. I thank you guys and I will miss you so much. Heartbreaking.
Yeah. It means so much to me that we were able to make this happen. We'll all cry and hug probably as soon as this ends.
Yeah.
But no, it means so much to me that we were able to do this and to be able to be in studio for this. It's been so long since we were able to.
I'm so pleased that we were able to do this.
Brian was supposed to be here, but he got huge diarrhea.
Massive diarrhea.
That always happens to him on every Friday. He should have known that would have been a problem. But no, Brian did want to be here. Unfortunately, wasn't able to. But like, obviously, and I'm sure he will tell you personally, but obviously sends his love and everything for here. But it's just been such a wonderful experience to work with you, to have you as my boss, to be a co-host with you on this show, to have done all this amazing work together. And I'm so happy and excited for the future for you. And we love you. We'll miss you, but it's been wonderful.
I don't know
the show with you.
I don't know when we became friends, but it happened just kind of immediately.
That
feels,
Like, I think we just, we maybe chatted on Twitter or something and then we met at E3 and then, I don't know. Then you lived in my basement after that. Sounds weird, but
I mean it's true.
No, you're like family. And it's just, I don't know. I'm deeply heartbroken to see you go, but I'm also happy to see you off, you know, going and doing exciting new things. And
I think one of the most wonderful parts about all this is that we are really good friends, and like it's not like I know when I step out of this building, like it's not like I'm never gonna see you guys again, because
if you were moving too, I would just block you.
I'm not moving, thank god.
Block and report.
You'll be in the area and be very easy to hop over and guest whenever you want to. The door's always open. But thank you for being able to make this happen with us, and thank you all the amazing work over the years and for all the wonderful shows together. It has been such a wonderful joy to do the show with you over the years, to make so much incredible stuff at IGN with you. And I'm so excited for your next step, and everyone will learn about that shortly. But thank you for being a part of Beyond to me since I've been here, and to what I think it is for so many people. So thank you
for letting me be a part of it.
Of course.
That is the most important thing.
I would not dream of it any other way. I remember the second Barrett and I were producing together, we were like, Lucy's moving. As soon as we found that out, we're like, we got to have you on the show all the time. That was like, literally he and I think turned to each other. We're like, Lucy, she's moving to America. Yes.
Well, also shout out to Barrett, shout out to Ronnie, and shout out to Red.
Oh yes. Yeah.
Who were my longstanding producers.
Yes.
Thank you for everything that you've done.
Absolutely. Well, Lucy, thank you so much for the show and for all of the amazing shows. Max, thank you so much as well. Yeah. You're not leaving, so I'm not going to get that.
No, actually, I'm doing the opposite of.
The dramatic lighting has changed.
Weird.
That's
our
warning.
I'm doing the opposite of leaving. I'm actually going to be covering for you the next 2 weeks.
Exactly. I'll be on vacation. Max will
be
hosting.
Guys, you got a sub. We're going to be watching Twister the first week and Mask of Zorro the second week.
And
in
if you
Spanish.
If you haven't, go watch the last thing we all did together as a group in studio, which was the one of only two episodes of our Bloodborne Let's Play, which are out there. And it was a wonderful, joyous time in the old studio. But anyway, thank you both so much for joining me for this week's episode. Thank you to Red, our producer, for making this show happen. And thank you to everyone out there for listening and watching and being with us through all the wonderful times. We hope you're doing well. We hope you're staying safe. And as always, Beyond.
Beyond.
Welcome. You've got a
digital folklore.
Monsters lurk in the shadowy corners of the internet. Our darkest fears peer back at us from the depths of the web. We can
Hey,
Linda Blair.
Are you all right?
No. Can we maybe do this a different tone? Hey there, I'm Perry Carpenter.
And I'm Mason Amadeus.
On our podcast, Digital Folklore, we explore monsters, memes, and everything in between.
Looking at our digital expressions through the lens of folklore, we break down the stories and communities we create online.
And we try to make it a lot of fun. The show is presented in an audio drama style with a narrative and soundscape that's designed to draw you in.
We weave insightful research and expert interviews with humor and storytelling. Come check it out.
Search Digital Folklore wherever you get your podcasts.